This is item J, and I ask the presenters to please take their seats at the presentation table. Welcome, Assistant Presiding Judge Steve Austin, Chair of the Court Interpreters Advisory Panel, and Justice Maria P. Rivera, former Chair, Access and Fairness Advisory Committee. And I'd also like the technical person to also introduce yourself, please.
Thank you, Chief. I'm Douglas Denton with the Court Language Access Support Program.
Thank you, Doug.
Buenos dias. I am delighted to be here speaking to you today, Chief Justice Baxter, Judge Jarre, and all the members of the Judicial Council and the staff, and everyone who is present in the chamber. I'm here and I'm excited and delighted to have a chance to tell you about our work on the very critical issue of language access, which is also, I'm very pleased to say, is an important piece of the Chief's vision for Access 3D in the courts. The presentation is designed to be brief. We're hopefully going to be speaking for less than 20 minutes. There's a lot more detail in the report that's been given to you. I'm going to begin with an overview of the size and characteristics of California's LEP population, and then Judge Austin will cover a number of topics, including describing the events that have propelled us forward at this time to develop a language access plan, including a discussion of the Department of Justice letter. He will also describe California's leadership in interpreter services and training, and also the structure and role of the Court Interpreter Advisory Panel in developing our plan. We will then together review the steps, timeline, and inclusive process that the Joint Working Group will undertake, and we've left 10 minutes at the end for your comments and questions and suggestions. So to begin, I'm going to ask what I think for all of you is probably a rhetorical question. Do we really need to improve our language access in the courts? I first want to recognize that the AOC, and especially the Center for Families and Children in the Courts, and many, many of our courts across the state, have worked very, very hard to provide a wide array of solutions for overcoming language barriers that are not required by law, because the branch has always been concerned about equal access. And the recent report that was commissioned by the Judicial Council on enhancing language access services gives you an overview of many of the things that are happening in our courts that are really heroic efforts undertaken by these courts in times of such limited resources. But despite all of these efforts, there are nowhere near enough interpreters or bilingual employees or resources or funding to provide language assistance to everyone who needs it. And I'd like to pause here and read, got ahead of myself. The numbers tell you why. As of 2010, approximately 40% of California's population speaks a language other than English in the home. And that includes over 200 languages and dialects. According to the U.S. Census, almost 20% of Californians do not speak English very well. They speak English less than very well. Now, in my experience, when people appear in court who speak English very well, they still have a hard time making themselves understood and understanding what the judge is telling them. And that is, of course, because our proceedings are held and discussed in a lot of legal and technical jargon. So speaking English less than very well, that is going to handicap the litigants even further and can effectively exclude them from meaningful participation in court proceedings. So now let me read to you From the excellent report, I think all of you are aware of it. It was issued by the Commission on Access to Justice in 2005 relating to the language barriers in the California courts. The starkest consequence of linguistic barriers to the courts is simply that justice is unavailable. The very people who are arguably the most in need of help from the courts are unable to obtain that protection. In routine civil proceedings, such as evictions, repossessions, creditor-debtor cases, wage garnishments, and family law matters, they cannot effectively defend themselves or assert their legal rights. And the court system itself can appear unfair and unbalanced because of an inability to understand the process. The defendants with limited English proficiency cannot meaningfully participate in court proceedings and thereby lose legal rights, property, livelihood, or shelter. So in answer to my rhetorical question, yes, we absolutely need to improve and expand language access in our courts if we mean what we say about equal access to justice. And to do that, we need a plan. And that's why we're here today. So quickly, just a few more numbers. As I've already said, 19.8% of the population of California speaks English less than very well. And the graphic also shows you that the majority of limited English proficiency, or LEP, persons in California are Spanish language speakers, and then followed by the speakers of the many Asian Pacific Islander languages that are represented in the state. Your attachment A to the report that was given to you, which we're going to be referring to a number of times, so you might want to get it out, gives you a lot more data about the most frequently spoken non-English languages and the LEP population in each of California's 58 counties. You will note, for example, that in Los Angeles County, more than a quarter of the population have limited English proficiency, and that is a tremendous challenge. And speaking of numbers, we, the group, recognizes how important it is to have accurate data so we can assess and understand language access needs. So for starters, the group will be looking at all of the available data, and there's actually quite a bit out there at this time, to make a best estimate of the scope and nature of the language access needs. And while we're doing that, we will be also looking at improvements in data collection and other tools for early and effective identification of language needs. And finally, before I turn this over to Judge Austin, I would like to remind all of us that language access is front and center in our strategic plan. In Goal 1, which addresses access, fairness, and diversity, we set these objectives: that all persons will have equal access to the courts and court proceedings and programs, that court procedures will be fair and understandable to court users, and that members of the judicial branch community will strive to understand and be responsive to the needs of court users from diverse cultural backgrounds. And this is our commitment to the community. So, Judge Austin.
Good morning. California is unusual because of its large geographic size, nearly 164,000 square miles, and because of its large LEP population. The state is divided into four distinct collective bargaining regions for court interpreters, and for this reason, language access practices and labor agreements may differ from region to region or from county to county. In Attachment A, you will find this map showing California's 58 counties grouped into their four collective bargaining regions. In our overall efforts to enhance language access in California courts, however, we will be looking for solutions that promote a consistent statewide approach, including quality interpretation efficiencies and cost savings, and improve language access for all of California's LEP court users while respecting the provisions of the negotiated memorandum of understanding in the regions. California has approximately 1,800 certified and registered interpreters, significantly more than any other state. 1,333 are Spanish-speaking interpreters. From the 2010 Language Need and Interpreter Use Study, which covered the years from 2004 to 2008, we know that the California courts provided more than 1 million days of spoken language interpreter services, with 147 different languages reported in the court data for the study period. Available court interpreter employees are cross-assigned or shared between counties in roughly 50 different languages. California is also known for its Professional Standards and Ethics Manual and Continuing Education Program, which have been models for other states around the country. California has developed model guidelines for the appropriate use of video remote interpreting, that's VRI, for ASL interpreted events, that's American Sign Language interpreted events, and was also the first state in the country to require that new interpreters take an online orientation course. The online course was developed by bench officers and seasoned court interpreters and is available on the California Courts webpage as a free service to anyone who is interested in learning more about California courts and the work of our court interpreters. While California continues to be a recognized leader in the provision of language access services, more can be done on a statewide level. The magnitude of the need for interpreter services in California is not the only impetus behind the current effort to create a comprehensive language access plan. For example, in 2010, the U.S. Department of Justice issued a letter clarifying the requirements that courts receiving federal financial assistance must provide meaningful access to LEP persons in order to comply with federal law, and urging them to act on an institutional level to provide a more robust array of services. The DOJ has been working with local jurisdictions and individuals to review their rules and practices and encourage full and meaningful language access consistent with the DOJ's guidance under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Most recently, the U.S. DOJ Civil Rights Division issued a letter on May 22, 2013, regarding its review of language assistance services provided in the Los Angeles Superior Court of California and its review of Judicial Council policies and directives. It is the DOJ's opinion that several current policies, practices, and procedures of the Los Angeles Superior Court and the AOC and the Judicial Council appear to be inconsistent with Title VI and DOJ's implementing regulations. The letter included several recommendations that the Department of Justice believes would help California expand services towards full and more meaningful language access for LEP court users. Two more examples of why now. In October of 2012, I was honored to be part of a delegation from California and joined nearly 300 judicial leaders from 49 states, three territories, and the District of Columbia to gather in Houston, Texas, for the first national summit on language access in the courts. The court and community leaders at the summit demonstrated a strong commitment to providing language access services as a fundamental principle of law, fairness, and access to justice. This year, the National Center for State Courts released a summary report, a national call to action regarding the summit. The report is attached to the council report at attachment D, and it provides a series of suggested action steps that states can use as a guide to implement or improve their individual language access programs. Additionally, in February 2012, the ABA adopted a set of standards for language access in the courts. So there has been a lot happening recently across the country and in this state, all pushing toward improved language access, starting with the statewide plan. Our efforts could not be more timely. Our very own CAP will play an important role in developing the plan. Let me briefly recap the structure of that group. The Court Interpreters Advisory Panel membership is primarily composed of certified and registered interpreters and includes judges and court administrators. Unlike other advisory committees, it was created by statute and is statutorily required to have a majority of its members as court interpreters. Pursuant to Rule of Court 10.51, the panel consists of 11 members, which are 4 certified or registered interpreters working in the trial courts, 1 from each of the state's 4 bargaining regions, 2 other than Spanish interpreters working as independent contractor in trial courts or in an educational institution, 1 appellate court justice, 2 trial judges, and 2 court administrators, including at least 1 CEO. To give greater support and attention to language access efforts, the California Court Interpreters Program, housed at the AOC, has been reorganized into what is now called the Court Language Access Support Program, or CLASP. This change reflects the breadth and importance of language access for the courts and will more effectively realign resources. The program will continue its role regarding interpreter services and will also focus on expanding language access services statewide. The unit's manager will serve as the language access coordinator for the judicial branch and will be a central point of coordination and communication regarding language access issues and interface with external stakeholders. Justice Rivera.
So, where are we in the process? The development of a comprehensive statewide language access plan was a key objective of the 2013 agenda of the Court Interpreters Advisory Panel. And working in collaboration with the Access and Fairness Advisory Committee, and thanks to the energy and the efforts of Judge Austin, a joint working group for California's language access plan was finally formed in June. I am the co-chair of that group, and the other co-chair is Judge Manuel Covarrubias, who is in Ventura County. And as you know, Judge Covarrubias and the entire Ventura Court have been very progressive developers of many different creative language barrier solutions. I want to refer again to the Hastings report. There's so much in there of all the things that have been developed, particularly in Ventura and Fresno and Kern and Imperial and Alameda counties. And they are going to provide a lot of models for us to be looking at. The group itself is diverse. It has judicial officers, court staff, court and court interpreter representatives, and in order to enhance our efforts and expertise, we've invited all the members of the Court Interpreter Advisory Panel to join the group. What we hope to produce is a thoughtful and practical language access plan that is not only comprehensive, but provides flexible guidance and direction for all 58 trial courts, ranging from Alpine County, that has 25 limited English proficiency persons in its entire population, and Los Angeles, that has 2.5 million LEP. We have done some work already. We're working on an outline. The outline, with the assistance of our very skilled consultant, who is Christina Yop, herself a certified interpreter, we've identified a number of subject areas, and let me briefly discuss what some of them are. This is not a comprehensive list, but these are really the highlights. We're going to be looking at guidelines, standards, and protocols for all providers of language access. And that's going to include, for example, volunteers and bilingual employees. We need to have standards that so we can ensure effective and correct and accurate language assistance. We will be analyzing the existing data on language needs. And as you know, you're now in the process of putting together the next 5-year report on language needs. We'll be drawing from the work that's being done on that. We'll also be looking at other ways to collect data from the courts themselves and from community organizations to develop ways to collect the data in an early and in an accurate way. Of course, at the heart of the plan is expanding court-provided interpreter services to all matters in the courts. But we are going to need to prioritize that because we're going to have to do a phased-in plan, and Judge Austin is going to discuss ideas about how that might happen. We will need to address bilingual and interpretive services, signage, and translated documents in ancillary court programs, and also at all points of public contact. We'll be looking at efficiencies that can be achieved through technology, scheduling, and calendaring practices. And this will include a very thoughtful and collaborative study of the effectiveness and the limitations of video remote interpreting. We will look at models for recruiting and qualifying statewide language service providers to meet court users' language needs. We are certainly going to have to figure out a way how to recruit and train and qualify more certified interpreters to meet these needs. And there are some models out there that are really interesting. I don't know if you know about the Laney College program that is actually has a court language interpreting course that is being given, and we're hoping to spread that out across the state. We'll look at areas that we need to, where we need training for the judicial branch, and that's everybody in the judicial branch. It's judges, it's administration, it's staff, and how we need to not only understand the needs of language access, but also cultural competency. We need to figure out a statewide complaint process because we have to be able to identify and remedy language access problems as they arise, and to prevent them from happening in other places. We will then also need to look at how, going forward, we're going to have ongoing language access management and continual evaluation of how these programs are going, how well they're working, and how we should adjust them, the feedback loop. And finally, of course, the hard part, identifying what resources and funding needs will be necessary to implement the language access plan itself. So as Judge Austin said, broad stakeholder participation and comment is going to be central to the development of this language access plan. We are planning to conduct public hearings in early next year, and we will, of course, be soliciting public comment on the draft plan. And as for timing, we hope, this is kind of a tight timeline, but we are hoping to come back to the Judicial Council with a draft plan next June. And then after getting all the public comment and feedback and making those adjustments, we hope to have a final plan to you in December of 2014. We also expect to bring you proposed amendments to rules and statutes that will be necessitated for implementation of the plan. And we will be, of course, providing progress reports and milestones, and we will be monitored by you, the Judicial Council, the Language Access Coordinator, and, of course, any other advisor groups that you choose to have be monitor us. So Judge Austin, talk a little bit about the gradual expansion.
I wanted to kind of go off my prepared remarks. We just had our first conference call meeting of the group, actually, to get things together for our next step, which is we have a meeting in November. And it was just so exciting. The people that were on the telephone call were so excited to be a part of this process that we'll be able to broaden and include so many other people in our justice system. I just think the thought of what could come out of this at some point in time is something that made all of us feel how important what we were doing is, and we're really looking forward to the process. And that process almost certainly will involve a gradual expansion of language access services and a phased-in approach that is guided and informed by stakeholder input. For example, court interpreters currently are provided for LEP defendants in criminal proceedings, witnesses in civil and criminal, parties who are deaf and or hard of hearing, and in a few civil proceedings. The plan might recommend an incremental expansion, first, say, into priority civil cases such as family law and unlawful detainers, then a gradual extension of services to all civil cases over the next 5 years. This phasing will be naturally metered by available personnel and resources. Obviously, we're going to need a lot more interpreters and bilingual employees and funding to pay them. The courts are also carefully beginning to use appropriate technological solutions. California's successful pilot that has utilized VRI for ASL interpretive events has demonstrated that significant cost savings can be realized through the more efficient use of existing resources and use of technology. We believe that more than $1 million statewide could be saved just from the use of VRI in ASL cases. So the potential cost savings overall could be significant. We will also be looking at ways to expand language services throughout the courthouse, like in self-help centers and online with the websites and web-based tools in the most commonly used languages. To ensure that we anticipate and address the most pressing LEP needs, robust public comment from all interested stakeholders is anticipated and welcomed to assist the members of the Joint Working Group in their efforts to develop a comprehensive language access plan for California.
In closing, I'm going to go off script for a minute also. I want to say two things. First, I couldn't agree more with Judge Austin's remark. The first meeting we had was very exciting, and people were very engaged in the process, and everyone at that group brings a whole lot of expertise and information to the table. I'm learning a lot, and I think we're all learning a lot. And I want to also mention that I was able recently to read the CFI position paper on VRI. I found it very interesting, and I'm looking forward to reading the article that is cited in there, the Braun article, because I think that it's going to be very informative to us as we look at all of the benefits and the limitations of VRI and where it's going to work best and where it's not going to work. And so I'm very anxious to be involved in learning way more about that process. So in closing, let me just say this. I've been in the judicial branch now for about 16 years. The judicial branch is constantly striving to improve access to justice for all Californians. But the time really has come for language access to be a major, major part of this effort. As both Judge Austin and I have emphasized, public and stakeholder participation is going to be critical to the success of the plan, and we will be welcoming it and looking for it at every stage of the development of the plan. I want to thank you for listening to us. We talked rather over our time, I apologize, and we're here to answer any questions or receive any comments or suggestions.
Thank you, Justice Rivera and Judge Austin. Judge Rosenberg has a question or comment.
I have a, thank you very much. I have a substantive question and then just a curiosity question. My substantive question is, in this process which we are launching, how are we intending to collaborate with the California Federation of Interpreters and the Association of Independent Interpreters of California?
Well, the frontline way is that they have members on the committee. In other words, members of CFI and members of the Independent Interpreters are part of CF, and CF is part of our working group. So we will have all of that expertise with us. I'm expect we will also be formally doing public comment and putting the plan out for public comment and holding public hearings. So anyone can come forward and present their views. And I'm expecting that there will be some informal collaboration as well, but we're not far along enough in the process to figure out what that's going to look like. But I expect that would happen as well.
Here's my curiosity question. I'm looking at Attachment 1, the language is spoken in California, and in glancing at it, I happen to notice there's a category for Indo-European languages, and then Hungarian is in other languages. Is there something special about Hungarian that it's not considered an Indo-European language?
You got me on. We could get our subject matter experts on that one.
Yeah.
We have a lot back here behind it.
As far as I understand, Hungarian is one of a kind, has no close linguistic equivalent to any other European language. And as a matter of fact, I think its closest linguistic relative is Mongolian.
Okay, got it.
There are only two.
And you don't have Basque listed here, but that's another.
We don't? Oh, well, no Basque speakers in California. I know we used to. There's a lot of sheep herders that used to be up in the mountains.
Thank you for that information.
Commissioner Alexander?
I just had a question with regards to the letter from the DOJ. They have 8 proposals about what they call steps towards voluntary compliance. And you addressed having the statewide language access coordinator. What's the plan with regard to the other proposals of implementing them during the course of this process as opposed to at the end of the process?
I think each of those recommendations are going to be integral to the process and the plan that we get to at the end. We've already, in the first call, we discussed those, and we're going to have to, at times, figure out how each one of them can be implemented or put into the plan itself, or whether they're not practical for us. We're going to have to go through each one and figure it out. But those recommendations are top of the list of things that we're going to have to deal with with the group.
I have a comment, and I want to say that the Conference of Chief Justices with the National Center for State Courts, this has been a very robust issue at all of the meetings I've attended. And it's an ongoing discussion because all of the states are trying to find a way to meet the needs in its state for language access. And some states are much smaller, and some states are not necessarily as diverse as California. California is, as you can imagine, and as you've described here in the statistics, unique. And I know that we face a number of issues in that plan, but I am grateful to you for your approach for this to be thoughtful and deliberate. And knowing that, given California's population and how meaningful this is, that we do it right the first time, or as close to right as we can get it, given the important stakeholders and the issues for public access to the courts. And so I know that we've had some suggestions and some ideas about fixing this, and I know there's a set sum of money, and I know there's different ideas about how to spend this money to best provide language access. But I look at CAP, and I look at Access and Fairness, and I look at this working group and your plan, and I'm gratified to know that it will be deliberate and thoughtful. And like much of what California does, especially with the assistance of the subject matter experts and staff from the AOC, you know, other states are looking to this as another model. And so I'm grateful for your work. I know it's not easy. We've had many discussions about how to approach this, and I'm gratified to hear about your approach. Yes, Judge McCabe.
All right. Thank you, Chief. In reviewing the attachment, a national call to action by the National Center for State Courts in conjunction with the State Justice Institute, Step 7 discusses utilizing remote interpreting technology and indicates 7 states have claimed successful use of VRI. 7 were interested in using, 15 were exploring. But it doesn't describe what states, how long, to what extent, how was it evaluated. None of the substantive information that I would want to look at before delving in that are even covered. It's quite generic. Have you looked at any of those types of questions in evaluating the viability of VRI?
I know that they have a great deal of backup material. When this summit occurred, that this turned into made this report, came out of the summit, there were articles and demonstrations of the equipment. I know the National Center has different studies that they've relied on, and each of the individual courts, they're not just rolling these things out there either. They've done studies as well. So we're going to be compiling all of those things together and looking at the effectiveness and what type of proceedings it may be useful for, what types it's inappropriate for.
I wonder, and out loud, which is usually dangerous, but I'll do it anyway, is the evaluation process is typically subjective. And so is it just looking at one side of the fence, meaning are they doing exit polls to actually talk to the consumers who are using these services to get a sense of whether or not it was helpful or was it impair their ability to understand the proceedings, et cetera, or are they simply relying on a court's analysis of, oh, yeah, that went well, it's done, out of here. You know, those are the types of questions I would want to look at to do a full analysis of whether or not this is a viable use, not just one perspective coming from the bench.
Judge McCabe, I think I absolutely agree with you. And I think, for example, the ASL VRI was done based on a pilot so that they did have the feedback loop. I know that we were working in Access and Fairness on having people do the actual, people who are hard of hearing, who are deaf, the actual analysis. Is this working? Is this not working?
And I apologize for cutting you off, but I've seen the ASL demonstration as well. But I'll note there's an advantage, and the advantage is that they are able to visually see and concentrate on the language without hearing impairment versus the other languages are happening at the same time that you've got a judge or a witness or somebody else talking. So there's multiple sounds occurring, which creates a greater complexity. So I don't think it's a fair analysis to parallel ASL.
Right. Well, that's not what I meant. I what I was meaning was the process.
Okay.
Not that ASL is equal to foreign language. It's not at all. It's completely different. Okay. What I'm meaning is, in evaluating the process, I mean, it would be folly to say, okay, we're going to send out video remote interpreting to 58 counties. Here's your TV. Here's your microphones. Go for it. It would be a ridiculous waste of money, and we need to do this very incrementally and very thoughtfully with a lot of testing. We need to see what's the right kind of equipment. There are studies out there that we are going to benefit from, the one that was extensively cited in the CFI report, that has lots of information about what all the problems are. It makes it consecutive interpreting, background noise, body language, you know, so many other things that need to be taken into account. So we are very well aware
of that. Okay, and the last point I have, and not to tell you how to do your business, but I'm really good at telling people how to do their business, and that is I would hope that there are some consistencies and continuity in the evaluation process, and it's not disjointed, simply taken from a variety of people who think that they're all talking apples and apples when, in fact, they may be talking apples and oranges or their approach is different. So that's very important when you're taking a sampling of a population that you have continuity in order to derive, a viable interpretation of the data. And so that's going to require a little more work in order for you to get that continuity, because either you have great training that everybody fully understands exactly the criteria used, or you're using the same people traveling around doing that. And just I throw that out there because I'm concerned about having a disjointed process that doesn't give us that type of accurate information. But I'm confident that you will do that.
We will definitely keep that in mind.
All right, and thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge McCabe. We appreciate the presentation and the future presentations you'll bring to council. Thank you for your hard work.
Thank you.